Taxes was waiting around for your taxes to be done, which led to worrying about not getting any money back. Now Taxes is matching with a TurboTax expert who can do your taxes in a day to get you up to $4,000 fast with a refund advance loan. Now this is Taxes. Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Expert filing only available with TurboTax Live Full Service. Refund advance has $0 loan fees and 0% APR. Refund advance loans may be issued by First Century Bank N.A. or Web Bank. Terms apply, subject to approval.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
Guys, it's the Full Blast Podcast on Black Friday. On Black Friday. And you know who's with me? Coy Baker from Baker Forge. And we're going to have a good time. Before we get into it, I want to thank a few of our sponsors. Number one is Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is a dynamite grinder for you. And as of now, up until, so from the November 18th through December 8th, they're going to have a Black Friday sale. All their packages are discounted, heavily discounted, and it really is great. Most of the packages come with the Matt Stagmer wheel, and I cannot say enough great things about the Matt Stagmer wheel. I saw it in person. It's awesome. The Super Mega package is dynamite. The Premium package is dynamite. All discounted until the 8th. You cannot use Knife Talk 10, but that's okay by me. After the 8th, December 8th, you can use it. But there's 10% off all attachments. There's a free set of drawing dies on the Power Hammer. And it's just, I mean, it ain't going to get much better than this. The stuff is awesome and the equipment is great. And I am a huge fan. So take advantage of those guys by all means. I want to thank my friends at Maritime Knife Supply. And this is your last chance for glory. Last chance for glory. So Maritime Knife Supply, Lawrence Lake, he does an awesome job with all your knife-making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat treating ovens, all that stuff. But what he did was he has a scholarship, $2,000 scholarship towards a class at the New England School of Metalwork. And if you're the ages between ages of 16 to 30, you got to hustle because the application is open until December 1st. So December 1st, after December 1st, you're out. So definitely get it. It's $2,000 towards a class and accommodations at the New England School of Metalwork. And the applications are on the New England School of Metalwork's website. And I would highly suggest it, especially if you're one of these people who come into my DMs and say, I want to try my hand at the New England School of Metalwork. Get off your fat ass and apply to this amazing opportunity before December 1st, or that's it. I mean, that's all we got. So definitely check out ahead of them. And many thanks to Maritime Knife Supply. Definitely support those guys. Support Lawrence. Get yourself some of that hex bar and get yourself the 10-pack of abrasive belts. You get 10% off. And it doesn't matter if you're in the United States or Canada. Everything's fast. He's the best. And if there's something that you're looking for that he doesn't have, tell him and he'll get it. Next, I want to thank my friends at Trojan Horse Forge, makers of the Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise. I tell you what, if you're looking for a Christmas present, this is the thing for you. The Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise comes in a bomb-proof case. Sam and Jeff have done it again. Their vise are built in the heart of Texas, and they're designed to take your handle finishing and hand sanding to a whole new level with features you won't find anywhere else. And part of it is comfort. You don't have to deal with 2x4s anymore. The vises are awesome, and I would highly suggest you get involved with them because, I mean, you ain't going to get much better than that. If you want to hand sand with ease, you're not fooling around with 2x4s, and if you want to finish your handles with 360 degrees, it holds your knife tight and comfortably and safely. So definitely check out TrojanHorseForge.com. Put in the promo code FULLBLAST10 for 10% off everything. I want to thank my friends at Texas Ferry Supply. Texas Ferry Supply have the Gator Piss. We're going to talk all about the Gator Piss today, but Texas Ferry Supply, my friends, just had the Blade Fest, and it was really great, and they have a lot of really good stuff for the knife maker, for the blacksmith, the bladesmith, the farrier, and they're a great company. They got the Rhino Wet, they got all that stuff. They have a lot of really good things for you, and it's another great American company, and they if you use the promo code KNIFETALK10 over at Texas Ferry Supply, you get 10% off everything. So I cannot say enough good things about the guys at Texas Ferry Supply, and you will too. So go check out what's going on with them. I want to thank my friends at Total Boats. Total Boats, the makers of adhesive paints, primers, polishing compounds, all that stuff. And I've been using the Total Boat High Performance Epoxy, two-part epoxy, for 2 years straight, and I have not changed my mind about how great it is. I also use their dyes. I use their dyes to when I want to dye the epoxy, because you don't want to have that clear epoxy coming down that firework. It looks like, well, we can get in that another day, but it doesn't look good. So get yourself some of that Total Boat, and you go use this link, totalboat.com/fullblast. If it's good enough for Keith Deason, Derek from Malden, Keith Johnson, Keith Mitchell, and even that scoundrel, Jimmy DiResta, is good enough for you. And definitely get involved with their Fathom Thick Set. I got some pieces curing in my home to keep it nice and warm. I love that Fathom Thick Set. It is great. No, and I can make my own hand. I can make my own hybrid handle material. So that's good enough for me. It's good enough for you. So go check out the links in the show notes, and that'll get you directly over there, and it'll give me some street cred. Many thanks to Total Boat. Oh, man, GL Hansen & Sons just sent me a care package. They sent me some G-Carta. It's a unique composite of natural fibers, fabrics mixed under epoxy under pressure. I tell you what, I love it. They're gonna the Bofa, the Ripple Cut, the Tuxini, the Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm G-Carta. I'm told I'm going to get some more of that Pheasant, which I love so much. The Colorama, the Hoopla, he sent me some ones with some gradations of color. I love everything about it. And if you go to gcarter.bigcartel.com, you will too. Easy to work with. He's always coming up with new things. And you don't have to use it for scales. You can use it for parts. I use it for parts. I love it when I use it for parts. So definitely check out them and go to @g.l_Hansen & Sons on Instagram and follow them. And I want to thank my friends at Tormach. Tormach celebrating 50 years of being in business with the Black T8 sharpening system. Stuff is, I mean, I can't thank, I cannot say enough good things about Tormach. And if you're a woodworker and you got to keep those chisels sharp, this is for you. No more of that, you're fooling around with that Waterstone. You ain't no ninja. Hey, let's face it. I mean, let's stop playing. You ain't no ninja. So why don't you get on the program and get yourself something that's going to give you some good stuff. It's not playing. Get yourself a Tormach. Go to Tormach.com or @Tormach_sharpening on Instagram. I want to thank them very much. We're going to be dealing with some with them soon. I love those guys, and I actually have had a couple people been sending me messages saying they got their Tormach and it's changed the way they A, sharpen knives, and B, sharpen their chisels. So definitely get involved with a Tormach. My guest is Coy Baker. Coy Baker is my friend. He is the owner of Baker Forge. That's Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. He is the one of the best minds in the making community. He's figured it out, and he's back. Coy, how the hell are you?
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you having me back on. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, dude, you're the man. No, listen, I tell you what. I when I do the ad reads for Baker Forge, I'm always amazed at how dependable the steel is. That's the thing is, I've had steel like with core, different kinds of cores from different companies, and the core is always cocked off to the side, or there's not enough runway. As I refer to the core as you got with the Baker Forge, you have enough runway for success. You know, you're not going to wipe away. You're not going to rush off and all of a sudden your core's not in the middle. I don't know how you do it.
Right. Quality control. I mean, when you make this much steel, it really kind of becomes important to keep quality control under wraps and checking all the bars every time. We constantly make the mistakes, but luckily we catch them before they go out to customers.
Cut down the side and then take a look, or?
Yeah, so, I mean, we obviously cut all the bars to length so we can see the end grain a little bit, and then we grind all the edges clean and get those all crisped up so there's no quote-unquote unusable steel, and that way it allows us to also see the edge of the billets so we can check that as well there. Every once in a while, you know, one still slips through. I mean, it's few and far between. We do a really good job. I pat myself on the back there. We do a really good job at looking through all the steel really well and making sure everything's exactly how we want it.
But you also have very good customer service. So if like somebody ever had a problem, you'll take care of it.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Ship it right back. If it doesn't work, I mean, they can keep it. I don't really care. Just shoot me a message, give me a call, and we get another piece right out to you. So
when I think about a lot, and we've had you on before, I've had you on before, and it's always great to talk to you about how you kind of have figured this out. I mean, you are an entrepreneur. I feel as though I was talking to my wife about it. My wife and I were walking the dogs last night. I said, hey, I got this guy, Coy Baker. He makes the steel that I bring every time I make a piece of Baker Forge steel home. A knife, I bring it to her to see because she's had it with me with the steel. I mean, she's known me for 30 something years. And she's right. Like, when I was a senior in college, I was making her steel roses. And ever since then, it's just like, I don't care anymore, frankly. And it's respectfully. She says it respect. I mean, she doesn't say it, but I can see it in her face. So I never
I can
really
relate.
Bring, you know, it's like, you know what? We have a great relationship, but it's like she's had enough. Like there was after 3 years of making her steel roses, she's just like, "Are we done with this now? Can we go on to something else?" I mean, she was very funny about it. But the only right. steel I always bring back to show her is the Baker Forge because she just can't. She can't understand it. And mm-hmm. when I had her, I was we were walking the dogs last night, and she was asking me, you know, so tell me about Quiet. I said, one of the interesting things is I feel as though you're an entrepreneur before you became a blacksmith because of your history with your family's painting company. And I feel as though your background with the painting company and your eagerness as a family to grow, this is the only reason why this has been successful.
It definitely helped coming into this with prior experience on the business side, for sure. I mean, you know, I did the blacksmithing stuff as a kid, but yeah, before I ever took it to be a business – I came from a family company where we were already running a regular retail, not retail, but direct service painting to customers. And so we were really comfortable with how a business was run in the back end, which I think is the main struggle for artists because the artists, of course, really love the creation part. And typically, more artist-y people are really good with people as far as interacting with people. But what the back end is the hard part. The taxes, all the paperwork, all the crap that is necessary to keep a company running. And we had experience in that, all three of us who started Baker Forge. So it kind of flowed hand in hand, you know.
See, but that to me is one tiny part of it. Because the funny thing is with like with knife makers, between this and knife talk, we get a lot of business questions. And the funny thing is I always just end up saying, well, you know, all the taxing and all that stuff, it's easy to deal with. Just pay someone to do it. And then it's all, you know, but the problem is we, the people who are involved with knife making, the young custom knife makers, the people who refer to themselves as full-time or part-time, as opposed to being in business, they don't have they're much more conservative in terms of taking risks. Mm. And I feel as though a person like you has been really comfortable with the concept of taking risks.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm, as a person, not naturally a risk taker, though. I will say that. But it is very apparent in business, in my business experience, that risk is required.
Right.
Without risk, there's no reward. I mean, you're just kind of meandering along. There's... I'm trying to remember. There's a quote about business risks. I don't know if it was Elon Musk or Steve Jobs, one of those guys. There was a quote about risks in business and how it's essential, because if you just stay comfortable, then you're staying where you are. You're treading water.
Yeah.
Risks in business mimic risks in life when you have to take a risk on something.
You know who I've talked to a million times, a lot of times, and I feel as though that when I think about, you know, people especially starting out as a knife maker or something like that, and they don't have the experience. The people who do have experience in risk are farmers and ranchers. Mm. And like, talk to Ben Snoor, and I talk to other farmers and ranchers. I have farmer friends of mine. There's being comfortable with risk, because with farming or ranching, things out of your control can happen, and you just kind of can't be paranoid. You have to use, after time, you get comfortable with the idea, well, it might not rain. You know, when I talked to Ben about like the ranch, he's like, well, you know, if it doesn't rain, we have to get water, or if there's no grass, then we have to bring in feed. And the people who deal with these real world problems, and they're very not, I wouldn't say comfortable, but they understand that it's almost like it's almost gambling, but it's like it's a calculated risks. But a lot of these guys, some of these guys who have experience in these businesses that are not like, you know, could fall apart tomorrow, they're more comfortable taking the risks. And I feel like it helps them down the line.
Mm-hmm. for sure. I mean, I guess looking back on it, I guess I'm a little more confident in taking risks more because of the people who work for me here. Like the setup, it would be easy for us to pivot to change something here, change something there. If let's say a certain product didn't work out, you know, that we took a risk on, like there's always an option to pivot with when you have a really solid foundation base here.
And speaking of Sal, how are things going? I know you were, I don't know if you were hit direct by the hurricane that ravaged Asheville and a lot of the Carolinas, but how are you guys holding up?
So we were extremely fortunate. This area, we weren't hit as bad as Asheville, but Asheville's only like an hour and a half from here, and we're further up in the hills. And it was bad. I mean, I don't think I couldn't access the shop for like 8 days.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I was one of the last couple of guys to actually get to it because I was the furthest out, and there's a highway between us that was completely wiped away and is still wiped away. They're still rebuilding it. So my commute to work went from 20 minutes to an hour and a half every morning.
Wow.
So, that blew.
I got to tell you what you did, speaking of, I hate to interrupt you, but what you did on Facebook where you were very, very supportive of the people in the area. And I copied and pasted and I read off on Knife Talk all the different people with GoFundMes and how you can help people in the hurricane. And I felt very good about what you were doing in regards to helping your neighbors.
Oh yeah, well, of course, because that's what this business was built on. It's on the community, and that's a big part of the company in my heart really is the community, because they support us, we support them, we wouldn't be anything without them, and so we wanted to be kind of on the front lines there to help our fellow makers who did get hit, because the building itself for us was fine. We didn't have any flooding, no trees. We just couldn't get to the shop for a while. So it kind of delayed some things. But the building itself and the land is completely fine. So we were very blessed, and we wanted to take that opportunity to really, since we weren't spending weeks and weeks rebuilding anything, to spend that time helping out our community. So,
did it affect your business at all? Or besides the fact you couldn't be there for a couple of days?
Yeah, just as far as production timelines, and we've got a bunch of great customers too. Everybody who I reached out to and said, hey, heads up, your order is going to be delayed because we can't get to the building. They were very understanding. We really didn't have any issues there.
How did like shipping over there work with all the problems? I mean, I don't know how you do most of your shipping, but I mean, was that affected or?
Well, yes, it is, because we ship here. From the shop, we have an office that is set up as a ship room, and UPS picks up here twice a day. So 5 days a week. So since we couldn't get here, there was no orders shipping out and no orders coming in, you know, supplies and whatnot. But that was kind of the case for everybody up here. I mean, it was just like the apocalypse there for a little while. No power, no cell reception anywhere. All the towers are out. So you literally couldn't communicate. It took me 3 days to get a hold of my parents who live 20 minutes from me.
Ugh.
And I couldn't get a hold of them for 3 days. In fact, we tried on two or three different occasions, my brother and I, to cut our way down the road to get to them. But we just kept it in landslides and missing road to the point where we couldn't get out there. And yeah, it was an ordeal. It was quite a mess.
How are things now?
A lot better. So the road maintenance crews were really good about getting out and getting kind of the areas that weren't hit too terribly up and running. So infrastructure kind of started moving again. There's a handful of areas, particularly the 421 highway, which is our main highway that comes through here. About 2.5 miles total of that are completely missing and washed down the ravine. And so it's been closed. And since the storm, and it will be closed until April, they said, before anything opens. So that's kind of been a pain because that's between our two towns. And so if any shipments originally coming up through that way got delayed for forever because they ended up having to backtrack around to the other side of the county. So logistically, shipping kind of was a pain for a couple of weeks afterwards. But all in all, now we're pretty well back on track. So other than the people who are homeless now.
Yeah, which is of course. But you're not in any of your staff or everybody in your staff's okay? Or
yes, we had the only one guy who actually had some real damage on his house. He had a couple of trees hit it, and he'll just need a new roof. But other than that, everybody else was fine. It's funny. Most of us live on high ground, which we didn't realize until we hit a storm. And then we started realizing, you know, everybody, most people here have a house that's much higher up in elevation. And the spots that got hit the worst are in the flooding areas, which are much lower near the rivers and stuff. So that was interesting.
Does it make you concerned about where your shop is? Like for the future? Did you ever think, hopefully this doesn't happen again? Or?
Well, not really now, because if a storm that size couldn't take out my shop, I don't think anything could.
All right, don't say it too loud. You know, the loud with you. So that's a cover. My father would refer to that as a Kanahura. It's like a jinx. Don't do it.
Well, so what's crazy is we have a little river that runs behind the shop, maybe 100 yards behind the shop is a river, and that river turned into a lake. And everything on the other side of the river flooded because it's a lower bank. But our bank is apparently high enough to push the water to the other side. And so it didn't flood on our side, but it was a lake on the other side. So as far as flooding is concerned, I mean, we're not even in a flood zone of any sort. So I don't think we would flood. But again,
all right, well,
knock on
wood. That all, hopefully all's well that ends well. I mean, you know, at the very least, I mean, you created some extra... hopefully community, you know, bonding to a certain, I don't know what else to say. I mean, I remember when it happened, I know a few people who were affected and it was just like terribly tragic and you don't know what to do. But the fact that you're down there and you're kind of like, you know, banding together, you know, it reminded me.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Me a little bit of 9/11 because you know the people are banding around each other and you know it obviously you know it's something that you would never want and you know but at the same time I mean you have this really kind of you create a different relationship with your community,
right? For sure. It was fortunate that John, who runs our social media, he lives in Montana, so he was able to help stay in contact with everybody on the socials and post the stuff about other GoFundMes and whatnot. Yeah. He was able to keep that rolling while I was sitting in a black, dark house with no power or cell reception.
Jeez Louise. For eight days? You had no power for 8 days?
Our house had no power for 9, but on day 3, we ended up driving up to my in-laws, who live just up the mountain from us, and they had a generator, a big, big generator that's hooked into their house, and freezers for us to put some of our big stored meat in, so... we spent the rest of the time up there, but yeah, our house didn't have power for 9 days.
Oh, jeez.
And no internet for like 14 or 15 total. Jeez. So, yeah.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, we're onward and upward, right? I don't know what else to say.
Onward and upward. Yeah. You know, I mean, the area is still recovering a little bit, and it'd be interesting to see what this does to the real estate market around here. That's a separate topic, but
Great question. I mean, what are you thinking? Are you thinking that people are going to move or move out or move in or?
Well, the interesting thing is this area has a lot of second homes. Like this is a retirement or / vacation house area destination. So when you start to look at that, where it's more of an investment piece for somebody else who maybe has an amazing portfolio already, it's probably going to prompt the sale of the land, house as is, in my opinion. So I would think that quite a bit of the area, a lot more land's going to start coming up for sale where there's just a wrecked house on it that people are just trying to get what they can out of it. Because there's no flood insurance up here. So like nobody's getting their money back for their houses flooding.
So like your employee is not going to get insurance to cover the roof?
So... the insurance would cover the roof because it was a tree. It wasn't flooding.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah. He's good. But anybody whose house was hit with a flood damage or like a mudslide, Those are both specific items that are written out of insurance contracts, and you have to purchase that separately.
Jesus.
And who would think to get that?
Yeah, I mean, unless you lived in a flood zone, nothing up here in the mountains is a flood zone. You know, it's the mountains. We live up high. So it's never heard of up here to actually have flood insurance. And so, yeah, nobody has it. So
how are things going at Baker Forge?
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
You know, oh, yeah, phenomenal. Of course it was phenomenal. We're always okay. Having a good time. We've got, I mean, so we're just entering this Black Friday deal. And in the past, I'm terrible about doing sales. And, you know, like something would come up on the calendar, whether it be Father's Day or whatever it is. And then I go, oh, it's a day away. Shoot, we should probably run a promotion. And so this year, 2024 was the year I was like, all right, John, you need to schedule this stuff all ahead of time so that I'm not trying to wing something last minute. So we actually planned for this, and we put a lot into Black Friday. We skipped a whole bunch of holidays this year because we wanted to put a lot on the Black Friday deal and just see how much we could push it and how hard we could go with it and how much we could sell at the cheapest rate possible and just give the customer optimum savings. And so that's what we did. We're starting pre-Black Friday deals running starting today that will run through Thursday, and then Black Friday sales Friday, Saturday, and then Cyber Monday deals Sunday, Monday.
So this is coming up. This episode is coming up Black Friday. So from Black Friday to Cyber Monday, if you go to BakerForge.com, there are 30% off, 40% off. I just checked out. I got the email that you sent out, and it is actually talking about when you said cheap. We're doing this year for Fader Knives has been a really great year for us because we've tried to take risks, more risks by. We've taken on more guests, taken on more employees last year, and then this year we've hired a PR firm that we've been working with for the past 8 months. It's been great, and then we decided to invest in as I refer to as the Cadillac of websites. So it's we've really kind of like put it out there. So my business partner said to me, "Well, we have a lot of stuff on the website," and he says we need to be aggressive. We have to have an aggressive sale for Black Friday. So I know all about it. We're making it hurt a little bit. We're making it hurt. I'm sure you're making it hurt a little bit too. Because, you know, all this work and you're just, you know, knocking off 40%, 30%. It is tough sometimes.
It is. And you start looking at those profit margins and you go, is this holiday really worth this? You know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, it's all about the customer at the end of the day. And so, at least for us, it is. You know, we're going to bring the value. We're going to give, because there's an opportunity here for maybe a newer maker who has not made a lot of knives, who's wanted to branch out into something cooler, but didn't want to drop $300-$400 on a nice big bar of steel.
Right.
And now they can get that for way, way cheaper, and they don't feel as bad about putting their feet in the water.
See, but here's the interesting thing, and I feel as though I know that you're not, you know, I think that what you guys do is great because you kind of really are approachable, and the steel, and I talk about it on this podcast, the steel is so easy, it's so easy to use if you're a stock removal guy. You really don't need a lot of special stuff. I mean, kiln is the most important thing, but other than that, it's really, I mean, you give the buyer of the steel all the tools to be successful. And that is like, that makes it so great. The funny thing is like going back to risks, I know this because I know we get the questions we get on Knife Talk and in my DMs. There's so many people who are unwilling to take the risk of a mistake. And I was talking to Mareko about it on this past week's Knife Talk, and I was just saying that, you know, so many people kind of want to risk, but they're just too afraid. And the funny thing about Baker Forge steel is it's money in the bank because it's like as long as you just use your head a little bit and just make sure. And the craziest part is it's different than a lot of steels, especially just regular Damascus, because the copper and the bronze, it's like – It's like training wheels. Like you, it's like if you were bowling and then they say, hey, you know what? I know you're really good at this, but I'm going to put the bumpers up to just, you're not going to hit the gutters. You right. can't, you know where, you know when you're grinding the steel, you know where you are because you see the copper lines. It's just like, it's easier than grinding the bevels on a regular knife, on just a mono mm-hmm. steel.
Right. And I've even heard it's addicting. Because you can see the pattern so well, you don't have to, you know, etch it.
You don't have to etch it.
Addicting to watch that pattern pop and show up all on its own.
Well, you have the ability to slow things down because all of a sudden, you know, if it's mono steel, you know, some people will take a line and then they'll scribe a line in and you look. But, I mean, you can't really, you don't have any visual, you know, signs to say if you're in the middle or not. Versus when you're using the Baker Forge stuff, even, you know, I pre-grind it. What I try to do is I pre-grind it. So I can release the core before I quench, and I feel like that's, in my opinion, that I feel like that I'm more successful that way, and to make mm-hmm. sure that the core is nice and hard. But it's like you can look at both sides, and you can kind of go back and forth, and you know what needs to happen. And it's like a lot of people are so afraid of risk, but at the same time, it's like I want to go full time. I kind of want to go part time. I don't know what I should do, and I'm afraid of spending mm-hmm. money and. What's the heat treating schedule? And it's like at some point, people are just going to have to take the risk. But, I mean, you're giving them all the answers to be successful.
Yeah. I mean, we try. We got the etchant there for the steel, and it all comes together. It is interesting. We ran some metrics probably last quarter on how many first-time buyers there were. Now, that's not on our website. That's not an indicator if they're a new knife maker or not, but to see how many new people keep jumping on the copper train, as I call it, is really cool. I think and I didn't set out to do this, but we've almost set a bit of a thing. I'm not sure what the right word would be, but if you're not using copper, using the copper steel, have you really used? I don't know what I'm trying to say here. It's become a thing. You know what I mean?
I understand what you're saying. You're not saying a trend. You're saying it's become. I feel like you guys are. It's your own thing. What Baker Forge is doing. I don't think that there's a lot of other companies making the steel that you're making in the amount you are.
Right. Well, and it's gone as far as to creating categories. Like if you go into, like if you look at a Blade magazine. You know, there's specific categories about where you can find more info on copper steel knives, you know, knives made with this steel. And they run specific articles on those regularly now. And it's got its own categories within the market, which a trend never gets. A trend comes and goes.
Have you noticed with any of the knife makers that you work with that people are asking for it? Like, because you get to the point where when you get customers who are asking for specific materials, like that's what mm-hmm. like GL Hansen's ones. I've recently been getting people who have never bought knives from me before say, do you have any of that G Carta? So like, I feel like that's like a real milestone where I would imagine that with you probably get that. Like I got a guy who has been buying knives for me for years and he says, let me know when you get more of that Baker Forge raindrop pattern. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, when I get it, I'll let you know. But I'm starting to get more people asking for it specifically.
Yes, and that's part of our marketing is we obviously market to knife makers, but we also work hard at marketing to the general public because somebody else out there who's not in the knife quote-unquote industry may not see a lot of our content, but they want a copper-infused knife. They just don't know it yet. And so it's our job to show it to them. And then we get it all the time. They contact a knife maker and the knife maker hits us up, never heard of us before. So it's a great way to do that roundabout marketing where we get the knife maker and the customer in one, and then we get the knife maker for repeat business.
What steel have you noticed is going the most? I know you have an AEBL core and I know you have an Apex Ultra and I've used mm-hmm. both of them. What steels are you noticing that are kind of becoming the most popular for you?
Well, between those two, it's definitely the ABL is more popular than the Nitro V. between those two stainless core options. Outside of that, I mean, as far as a specific steel, it really comes down to the pattern. And our patterns kind of dictate demand, or seem to dictate demand. Our Riptide steels are by far the most popular.
Yeah, they look great.
By any metric, any Riptide is doing really, really well. And that was kind of confirmed by that whole series we did on Sundays where we were doing the bracketed, you know, people vote for their favorite steel bracket style. Yeah, we ran that for quite a while, and Brian House did the reads for us. That really showcased exactly which steels were the favorite, because they ended up in the top three, and they're all Riptide.
Wow.
So that was kind of cool to see. But we're rolling some new stuff. Like, 2025 is going to be a crazy year, and you're going to love this, because we're going hard in the stainless Damascus in 2025.
That's the future, dude.
It is the future.
That's the future. Down. We've been talking about this on Knife Talk. We've for years, every so often people ask us, what do you think the future is? And when the three of us all talk about it, stainless Damascus is, I feel as though that is the future. And you can see some of these commercial companies are making stainless Damascus, and they're or I don't even know what it is, but I mean, you're seeing the masses using more something similar to a stainless Damascus, but that's the future. That's no question.
Yes, for sure. And the more companies we talk to, you know, we keep hearing the same story from those guys. It's they don't want the customer, the extra customer work after the sale that carbon steel has, where you've got to follow up with, oh, my knife is rusted because I left it in the freaking dishwasher, halfway stuck into a watermelon for 2 days.
Right.
And so they don't want to deal with that post-consumer data or work. It's just a lot more work for them. And so the companies we've been talking to who already buy carbon from us, as soon as I just said the word stainless, they're like, yes.
Yeah.
As soon as it's up and running, I'm sending you a PO, a massive one. So the market's already hungry for it. And the cool part is we're bringing the copper along with it.
Oh, cool.
There will be full rendition, copper my, stainless everything, including dark etching stainlesses so that you can get the contrasted look of our current steels, but in stainless.
Awesome. That's the big, that's the big thing that I think that's the one thing that one of the characteristics that your steel has is you have very, very strong contrast between the carbon steel, the nickel steel, and then the copper or the bronze. So that's
important. We wanted to maintain that. Cause it's a kind of an iconic look with us.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. So it makes me ask, I would imagine, just because I know what stainless Damascus takes to etch, I would think that there's going to be a big brother to Gator Piss, your proprietary etching. All right, so Gator Piss is also one of the most talked about etchings on the market. I don't think anyone has ever talked about I don't think anyone ever cared about etching, frankly. But that's, I mean, if you don't know about Gator Piss, I mean, I don't know what the rock. You don't care, frankly. But I would imagine, because I know that ferric chloride isn't enough to etch stainless steel Damascus. Right. I would think that you got to have what are we? Are you going to make big changes to Gator Piss, or
it will be fairly large? Yes. So we'll have
Muriatic-ish.
There's going to be a much higher concentration of hydrochloric in it, which is Muriatic's parent. We're still in testing with that, but we do plan to kind of launch these two simultaneously, stainless Damascus and we don't have an actual name for it yet. It's going to be just a version of Gator Piss something.
You know? Oh, it's got to be something great. It's got to be something let me help. I mean, I beg of you. I mean, it's
all right.
You gotta
let's go. I got a
Triceratops piss or something like that. You gotta have something like it's gotta have something ridiculous, like a T-Rex piss, or it's gotta be something more like an iguana. Something you have to have it. You gotta keep going.
Well, I've got to keep the Gator Piss branding, so it's got to be an addition, like Gator Piss
Mega,
you know, blank, whatever it is. Gator Piss Mega, Mega Piss.
Gator Piss Godzilla. Something like that. I look forward to it. But you also, I would imagine, and I'm not being funny. I would imagine that you have to be very clear the fact that Gator Piss and the Gator Piss Plus or whatever you're going to call it. You want to make sure people know that the Gator Piss Plus won't work with, you know, because it's muriatic and hydrochloric. It's going to be totally different on your regular carbon.
Right, right. And that's part of the testing we're doing, is not only finding a good recipe for the stainless, but also seeing what carbon does in it and what to be able to tell customers they could expect if they accidentally mixed them, or if it even is a problem. You know, testing basically what does it do? And we're not quite there yet, so I don't really know what it's going to do.
You always got crock piss. It's not bad. It's not bad. Crock piss?
It still deviates from gator piss too much. They've got to keep the gator in there because it's part of the branding.
I mean, is it? I mean, it's like you get them. See, my fear is especially when something's an addition, like something plus. I always just like, well, what does that mean? Like, I feel like you need like a cousin. You need the name's got to be something like a cousin or something. But I would imagine that no matter what you do, it's going to be dynamite, because that's the big issue. I think that's going to be that's the big issue that people have with stainless Damascus is the fact that the etching isn't the same as you're using muriatic, and it's usually warm. You're warming it.
Right.
I mean, when I do it, I warm it, and you really don't need to go. It's just different. It's just a different way of doing it, but it's doable. But I can't wait. I mean, dude, yeah, you got me hooked. I'm using that Baker Forge all day.
Oh yeah, we'll have to get you some of the stainless to play with
anytime. Do you know me? I'm with you. Whatever you want.
I've been loving what we've been coming out with right now. I mean, we're still in the early stages. I hope to have stainless in production in the first quarter of 2025. So we've got a little bit of time still. We're still playing with what the patterns look like and, you know, exactly what we want. But we've got the process down. It's obviously a very different process. It's kind of obnoxious. But we're excited to bring this to market because we've been missing.
No, I'm sorry. Is it a huge difference? Is it a huge different process from the regular?
It is, in the fact that you have – well, some things are the same. Some things are very different. So – the stainless obviously needs an inert environment, so you have to flood it with argon gas in a canister, which we don't typically have to do with most of our other stuff, but you always have to do it with the stainless. It's picky that way. So there's that. There's different prep. So when you look at turning something into production, you've got all these prep steps that are done in, you know, a scaled version in volume. And so when you think, oh, that wasn't that bad to make one bar of stainless, and then you go, all right, well, now I need to make 70 of them. And how are we going to structure the quote-unquote production line to look? What steps need to be combined to happen all at once? Which steps need to be separated out and done at a delay so that this first step isn't getting backed up? You know, all that kind of stuff that I really enjoy, but it's kind of boring to a lot of people. All that has to be figured out ahead of time. You can't just start welding up, you know, 50 bars and go, all right, let's just go throw them all in the fire at the same time. No, stainless oxidizes. You can't just let it sit around. So, you know, lots of things to think about there, but we're excited. We're excited.
And then you're going to get into you're probably going to have to get into the stainless foil business, and there's all sorts of like add-ons, because the foil always works better than the whatever the paint that you use to when you're heat treating. So I can see once you do something about the stainless foil game is changing too, by the way. I don't know if you know this or not, but when you buy stainless foil, it's all smaller lengths. It's all smaller widths, and I don't know what happened last year, but it's a disaster. Like, it's more expensive, and you get less material. So
There must be a singular manufacturer that's supplying most of these distributors, and I think they must have changed something in their process and product.
They changed it because it used to be you used to be able to get 2-foot rolls. Now you're getting 20-inch rolls.
Yeah,
and that 4 inches makes a huge difference if you're trying to like slap out. You know, you're trying to cut. You know, you can make 6-inch. Oh, I'm not gonna talk about foil. What are we doing?
Well, they
what are we doing here, guys?
They pulled a Walmart on us, and it's now less for more. That's basically
it's not good. But other than that, but one of the things that is good is your social media is always great. And what I thought we could do is we could do a couple things. I know you said to me a while ago you wanted to do play some games or do weird news. But one of the things that's so great about following Baker, Forge, and Tool is you always ask your guys, you know, you'll stop them. And I always imagine, you know, they're working hard. They're covered in dirt. They don't look like they're fooling around. You're yanking them out to the back to answer some questions. And the questions are always ridiculous. And half of them look annoyed. That's what I like the best. Like, I'm just like, I got to get some work. I'm between heats. And you're just like, okay, well, how many chickens would you like to fight if you had the choice of fighting chickens? So I thought maybe we could do is you could ask me some of your crazy questions. I'll ask you some of your crazy questions, and then we'll hit some weird news.
Okay. Sounds good. Right. I had them get me a whole list here. Some of these have already been in our Baker Forge reels on Instagram.
Okay.
So listeners can go back and check that out. But some of them haven't been yet, so... Would go you ahead. Prefer one we've done or one we haven't done?
I don't care. Whatever you want. You do one, then I'll do one. I'll read you one.
Would you rather be 400 pounds or your partner be 400 pounds?
Oh, God. You know what I heard? You know what the funny part is when I watched you guys do that? I felt like everybody was answering that question. Everybody was answering that question because they knew that their partner was going to listen. And I know my wife isn't going to listen to this. So I would rather be 400 pounds because if I'm being honest, I felt like I was wondering when you guys were reading that, when you were reading it off, I was like, I don't know which one of these guys is being really honest. And I was just like, I'm sorry for saying it, but being honest, I think I'd rather be 400 pounds.
I don't know if I could physically handle it.
Physically handle being 400 pounds, but you know, you work it off.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's not the question.
Well, no, I mean, you have to have the mindset of like, all right, be 400 pounds for a minute or two. You don't have to be 400 pounds for the rest of your life.
Well, that's true.
You know, I mean, I'm going to work around these things. I'd rather be 400 pounds, and then as soon as I hit 400 pounds, I'm doubling back.
Doubling back, right. No more ice cream cones.
I'm doubling back. All right, I'm going to ask you. Now it's my turn.
All right.
What's the stupidest thing you've ever argued about with someone?
Oh, it was probably pretty stupid. I can already tell you that. Golly, Pete, what was the stupidest thing I argued about? See, you should give me these questions ahead of time so I can come up with something.
Oh, well, that's no fun because then you can think about it. I know for a fact that my sisters and I have screamed at each other over the stupidest thing. I actually screamed at my one sister a couple days ago because we all talk to each other, but then it's like telephone. So I'll say one thing to one person, one of the sisters, and then that sister will say something, kind of fucking say it in a way to the other one that makes no sense. And then the other one will come to me saying, I heard you had this problem with so-and-so and such, and I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened, and I just... It ignited me, and it was so stupid. And I said, I know exactly what I said. I had to apologize. My sister was furious with me, and she's an older woman. She's almost in her 70s, so she's like not putting up with her younger brother's bullshit. Right. I'll never forget what I said. I said, I don't know what the hell's going on with you. I say something, and I don't know what the hell. The words go in your ear, and it rattles around in your brain, and it comes out of your mouth, and it's so fucked up. I don't know what the fuck is the matter with the two of you. And it was like my sister was just like, what the fuck is the matter with you? And I lost my goddamn mind, and it was like a couple weeks ago. And I think it was something to do with my daughter, they said something, somebody said something, and I lost my goddamn mind. And it was complete 100% stupid, and I had to apologize, and it was just like, but I remember exactly what I said. I don't know what the hell's going on. That something goes in your ear and it rattles around in your brain, and then when it comes out of your mouth, it sounds so stupid I can't even believe it. So that was the last thing I said. It was very stupid.
Well, I'd probably say, I mean, I argue about a lot of stupid stuff, I'm sure, but it happens from time to time. I have an argument with my wife where we'll be arguing about something fairly important, but then realize partway through that I'm arguing with her and she's making the same point I am, you know, but coming at it from completely different angles to where I wasn't paying enough attention to realize that we're arguing the same side. I hate it when that happens. And that Dude, happens from time to time.
I've been married now for 20, coming up on 24 years. I've been with my wife for 30. Mm-hmm. And something will happen, and I'll think to myself, you should really start an argument about this thing. And then the older I get, in the beginning, back in the day, you get in the argument. You go, yo, this is bullshit. You know, and the older I get, I it's almost like I have like a board meeting in my brain. Mm-hmm. I think we should have an argument, and then someone says, you're making a huge mistake. You're making a giant mistake. This is a huge mistake. Don't do it. And then the argument person is just like, we need to make sure she knows how we feel. And then that righteous, smart, older person is like, this isn't going to turn out the way you're hoping.
Right.
And then it takes a long time before the self-righteous one figures it out. But I've usually, by the time I've gotten there, I'll say something. And it's always a mistake. And then I'll go back to the boardroom, and then the wise one will say, I told you, you idiot. What are you doing? You got to listen to me more often. I know what I'm talking about. It's never going to work. So I do my best not to argue.
Yes. I mean, same here. We've been married 10 years now. So just had our 10 year. And
oh, congratulations.
Thank you. We've definitely... we've learned how to communicate pretty well, but there's nothing worse than getting all worked up over something and then realizing you're arguing the same point that she is, and you're just never mind.
Was it worth it? And then you said it's never worth it, and it's just like, oh my God, why did I do this? And I didn't mean it, and I'm sorry. And then when you apologize, it doesn't sound sincere. You're just like, ugh, I'm so stupid. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry already. And then it's just like, oh, now you sound like a bigger asshole.
Yeah, right.
So
right.
Don't fucking get into it. This is like the banana in the tailpipe. Just avoid it at all costs.
All costs. I'm with you.
That's where I'm with you comes from. I'm with you comes from. It's the ultimate form. And now, but the problem is my wife knows about it. So it was the ultimate conversation ender. And I started because I'd have these guys would come to my shop and they would tell me all political stuff. They'd talk at me. And I would say, I'm with you. And it was like, it shut the conversation up. There's no more. And then all of a sudden, I'm saying it all the time. And then I told my wife, I was like, if you could say I'm with you, people start to stop talking. It's great. It's like the open sesame of conversations. And then I did it to her, and she's just like, don't pull that shit with me.
Don't pull that shit with me.
What are you, nuts? Like, you just told me the whole thing. I kept my mouth shut. All right. What's your next one? What's your next question?
Okay. All right, let's see here. Would you rather have hot dogs for fingers or hamburgers for butt cheeks?
Oh, hamburgers for butt cheeks because I can have pants on.
Right. 100%.
That one is weird. But I mean, I don't want to. You know who has hot dogs for fingers and it looks fucking bizarre? Is King Charles. Have you seen his hands lately?
Yes. I heard you guys mention that on Knife Talk a while back and I looked it up. That is freaky.
Yeah, it's like his fingers are so red and swollen, it looks like they look like boxing gloves almost. It's just bizarre, and it's like his rings look like they're about to, you know, choke a finger off, and it's everything about it is horrible. So I would definitely eat hamburgers for butt cheeks.
My problem would be I'd be constantly eating my fingers if I had hot dogs on my hands. That's right. Like you're gonna want to cook something up, and it's gonna make me hungry all the time. So yeah, pass on that. Put on pants, you're good to go.
Would you rather live in a world without electricity or a world without gasoline?
It's interesting how some of those kind of go hand in hand a little bit.
Right.
So assuming we could have the power without,
I don't know. I mean, that's the question. Let's just pretend like it's magic. Electricity.
Okay.
Is
so
magic.
For argument's sake, I can have power even if there was no gas anywhere.
You'd have to live in a world without electricity or a world without gasoline.
But in the world without gas, I would have power, correct?
I don't know. I mean, that's not... This is some fucking bullshit questions here.
We got to qualify terms.
All right, qualify the terms. Okay, so go ahead. So what are your terms? And I'll see if it agrees.
Well...
Go ahead.
If assuming the world without gasoline allows you to have power, you know, getting power from solar or something like that... Then,
well, you'd be having the power from the gasoline. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm going to say world without power because Yeah, I want the gasoline. There's a lot of uses for gasoline.
All right, I think I'm going to go with the electricity. You know, it's just we do have an electric car, and I swear to God, it's very comfortable. But it doesn't. The problem is like you can't go. It's a commuter car. It's my wife's car. You can't go very far. Like you couldn't go for a long. You couldn't go for a trip with it.
I've always wondered. I've never owned an electric car.
Go ahead.
When you're on a trip, let's say you took it for a trip or had to.
Right.
How do you find places to charge it? Because I know
Tesla has ours is one of the older ones. It was actually Hillary's father he got it and he hated it and he didn't even tell us. He just shipped it to us.
Wow.
So it was great for my wife, but the problem is like you can go to, and I think there are more and more places that you can do a quick charge. But I mean, I had a Tesla pick us up for a flight in Atlanta, and what he did is he had a big screen on the front of the console, and then it'll tell you where all the spots are, and then it'll tell you, you know, and it only takes 20 minutes to do his charge. I don't think it's a full charge. But Tesla's trying to make it very, you know, understanding that, you know, you can go on a big trip. But, I mean, in New York, forget it, you know.
So. Right. Gotcha.
All right, what's next?
All right, let's see here. Got to pick one. These are all so good. Let's go easy. Radio, music, or podcasts on the way into work in the morning?
That's a tough one, only because I listen to three local radio stations, and they're totally different. All three of them are totally different, and I really appreciate the. I frankly would rather listen to radio, talk radio, than podcasts. And the reason is because I feel as though most podcasters have lost. You know, they don't know how to broadcast. Like they don't know how to be entertaining, and a lot of them feel as though. They want to hear themselves, but they don't realize that the listener has to have an enjoyable time too. So I feel as though a lot of podcasts now, there's tons of them, and some of them are really good, and some of them are in the maker community. It's a hit or miss, and even Knife Talk sometimes I listen back, and sometimes they're just like, well, we could have done that better, or that could have been, and I'm shortening them down too, because you know that whole Joe Rogan thing of 3 hours long doesn't work, because I mean, unless you're incredibly, I'd rather have a very good beginning, middle, and end to a show. So I listen to radio more than podcasts.
On that podcast thing, have you noticed in your metrics on the podcast it dip at a certain point, like consistently people drop off over a certain time?
There was a website that we used to use for metrics, and I honestly stopped doing all that because you can get a little bit too concerned. It can be a little bit stunting. So what I do is just I listen back and I kind of know when it sounds good. And I my litmus test for a podcast has got to go through what's called the time machine, where it's so compelling that you forget what you're doing. Like that's really where it is. And even if listening to the ones that you're in, you can feel that the conversation is so compelling and the audio is really good and they have a real chemistry. And then that way you can have something kind of good. But the problem with a lot of especially maker podcasts is this guy talks, then this guy talks, then this guy talks. And then there's no, like, you don't question another person, or that's interesting. Why do you think that is? So I really try to make it more engaging as opposed to, I try at least. But I listen to a lot of bad radio, but I appreciate the chemistry that the radio hosts have. Like I listen to sports radio all day long. And then there's one channel and I like it because I feel as though I'm getting better at, I feel as though you got to stick with a show and, you know, see how it goes over time. I love the chemistry that these sports guys have. And I love the chemistry they have with the audience too. I also listen to an urban station. I listen to Charlemagne the God, who I think is fantastic. And I do listen to some news stations with opinions, and I think some of them are really good. So the answer is I'll listen to radio over podcasts. And the other reason is I'd rather, if I'm going to be influenced, I'd rather be influenced by radio than influenced by other makers' podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Good point, good point.
Yeah, because, I mean, these motherfuckers, all of them, all these maker podcasts, they rip us off anyway. I mean, they're thieves. They're thieves. All of them are – they're like knife makers. Knife makers and podcasters are like, these are the same people. They're fucking uncreative thieves. I'm saying it tongue-in-cheek.
Peace and love. Peace and love.
Peace and love. Peace and love. Yay. Howard Stern just had Cher on last week. It was great. He was really, really good. And frankly, she tore him up. She said, I've never been on the show before because you said some horrible things to me, and he apologized. It was actually really good radio. So what do you listen to?
I enjoy podcasts. I listen to the radio in the truck, but normally it's a music station.
Right.
I don't do a whole lot of talk radio. I did grow up listening to talk radio because my dad was big. He listened to a lot of, Dave Ramsey for one. Spent a lot of time listening to him as a kid. And then, what's the big guy always smoking a cigar? Rush. There we go.
Rush Limbaugh. My Rush uncle Limbaugh. was a big Ditto head. That was a fan of Rush Limbaugh was a Ditto head.
Yep.
What's interesting is like the craziest thing that people don't talk about is how many famous broadcasters came out of Long Island, not Rush Limbaugh. But Howard Stern, Opie and Anthony, Sean Hannity, who's the guy who with the loofah? He was from Fox News, and then he was that big tall prick. You know what I'm talking
about? Oh, gosh, no.
The guy who no spin zone? The guy no spin zone? What is his name? O'Reilly. Pat O'Reilly. Not Pat O'Reilly. Yes. What should we call O'Reilly? He was from Long Island. Alex Jones. And Alex Jones wasn't from Long Island, but the other guy was from – they're all from Long
Bill
Island.
Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly. All those guys, the best radio broadcasters who are now like big-time hosts, they're all from Long Island. It's crazy. Long Island is a relatively small part of the United States. And, I mean, a small part of New York. And they're all the best ones all came from Long Island. I find that to be fascinating.
Interesting.
It's one specific spot.
Is there a station hosting school or something there? Or like,
well, there's not in New York, but there's a number of communication schools. But it is interesting because it's hard to find talk radio in general now. And a lot of it's a dying art because the listenership doesn't care. And the crazy part is the difference between radio and podcasts are so convenient, except for the fact that they should. It's more interesting when it's time dependent. Like when I first started Full Blast, I was banking them and I thought I'd just give myself a break. And that was a month out. And then all of a sudden it just doesn't sound the same. So when you listen to sports radio, you don't want to listen to sports. I don't want to hear about the playoffs now. Playoffs are a month out. You know, who cares now? So certain things are time dependent. And the fact is I would love to do a radio show or a podcast where we take listeners and have, you know, internet, you know, I love call-ins and stuff like that. But the new audience, they don't want it anymore. They're not interested.
Right. They like the on-demand aspect of a podcast.
And
so
frankly,
begs the question.
Go ahead. No,
go
ahead.
I was going to say, it begs the question, is talk radio going to on its way completely out? Are we going to transform all the way to a podcast sort of platform and away from live radio?
It's a two-part problem. Number one is the art of broadcasting. People learn how to broadcast. And part of that learning how to broadcast is just doing the radio. So like, there is a new guy on the sports guy, He's not new. He's been on this. He's been on the middays now for about 2 years. And he's good. He's really good. His name's Sal Licata. He's got a show with Brandon Tierney and Sal Licata. It's actually a good radio show. But he spent years on the overnights just finding his voice and doing show after show, week after week, month after month, year after year. And it is like a muscle. So the longer you do it, that's why I've had such a huge problem with people saying, I had one guy says, I want you to be on my podcast. I said, how many episodes did you do? And he goes, I hadn't done any yet. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. You got to do 100. You got to give me 100. Mm-hmm. And the thing is these guys don't realize that the more you do, the better you get at it. And it's like these guys, the radio guys, the guys who do 5 years from doing the 11 o'clock to 3 to 4 a.m. shift or 5 a.m. shift. And it's talking to the cab drivers. And it's like trying to have a conversation with a guy who might be a crazy person. And it's how do you like get people, kind of keep people occupied on the radio. So I think it's a skill. And I think that Joe Rogan has done an unbelievable job, but he's compelling. I feel as though there's a lot of people who have created their own podcast thinking that it's quantity over quality. And they're really not, they're not good at podcasting. They're not at like occupying someone's time and space. And I'm still learning too. I've been doing this for 12, 13 years. And Knife Talk and Full Blast don't take breaks. And part of it is because I hope that I'll be a better interviewer and I'll be a better, you know, broadcaster. But I feel as though a lot of guys just want to be like, you know, a lot of guys just want to sit around with a drink and then, you know, say a dick joke every so often.
Right.
And that's sometimes that's not compelling at all.
It's much less formal. And it lends itself, it shows that in the conversation sometimes and the interaction between the people on. Because you think a radio host has all the timing he has to get right. You know, the art of the timing is a huge part as well, because you got ads that are coming in. It's all live. You know, you can't just go back and tweak things.
I'm starting to think about, like, I listen now to when the breaks are. Like, they'll have a break. Like, they'll do 3 minutes and then they'll do an ad read. And then they'll go into the phone calls, or there'll be like a stinger, and then they'll go into, you know, who does the intro every day. And I'm thinking about like how formulaic you can do it. And then also, how can you make it seem like, that's why I love doing the ads on this show, and I love doing the ads on Knife Talk, because I'm trying to make it less formulaic, and I'm trying to make it on the funny side. That's why Gator Piss is the best. That P.S., that's why I'm so glad you guys let me fuck around. Because makes it so far more funny and compelling, and then all of a sudden people listen. But I think it's a dying art. I think that podcasts are destroying broadcasting. But what I do believe is there will be a resurgence, and then live content will be far more valued, and then you're going to start to see more broadcasters come back. But what's interesting is, and I'll leave you alone because I know we've hit this. I mean, I'm fucking obsessed with it. But what's interesting is all these radio shows, they're all, because radio is dying. I mean, talk radio is dying. All these, just radio's dying. You know, all these radio stations are now selling their towers. They're selling everything. They don't want it anymore because they can't get the ad revenue. So all these talk radio stations are making their hosts all do podcasts. So that you can, they want to try to compete with all this stuff, and you know it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next 10 years. But hopefully, you know, some people are going to fall away, some people are going to stop, you know. But at the same time, I think it's far more compelling than the way it used to be.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what it does for the next 10 years.
Let's hit a couple more questions, and then we do a little weird news.
Got another one for me?
I do, but okay. What would you be doing if you could turn your hobby into a career? So if you didn't do this, let's just say if you weren't doing Baker Forge and you could pick a hobby that you'd want to make your career, what would it be?
Good question. Let's see. These days don't have much for a hobby, but I have diverse.
But the hobby, we can make hobby. Hobby can be like a small, you know, time, whatever. So you like, you know, if you want to be a, you know, fisherman or something. Like that.
You know what's funny is my peak interest is in the business building. So if I wasn't building this business, it would be building a different business.
What kind of business?
It wouldn't have to be a specific business. That's the problem. It's because the journey of the creation of the company is where I get my rocks off. So I'm going to set that completely aside and go to something total left field to actually answer the question. And that would be a Western hunting guide, up out in the boondocks, having to ride a horse to a super remote location, guiding other people on big game hunts. That I'm a big hunter, or I was before I got busy with the business. Loved hunting deer, elk, bear, pigs, you know, everything. So I'd probably rather do that. I love being out in nature, not you know, around the busyness of the world and just taking some time to absorb the quietness that is nature in some of those remote locations. So that's probably what I would go with.
I have one guide story that I've never told, I don't think. My dad was a winemaker, and I used to go around the vineyard and just like, I never hunted. I went on some hunting trips, but I never got anything. And I didn't really, my dad was not a gun guy anyway. So we never really had that. But I knew where the deer were. Like I would go up in the woods and I'd see where the deer were. And my dad had this friend who's this German hunter, awesome guy. His name is Wolfgang, of course. I mean, you can't make it up. And my dad said, would you consider guiding Wolfgang to find where the deer are? And I said, sure. And I said, do I get a gun? And he goes, no, you don't get a gun. I'm like, all right, okay, I'll take him. So I took him up into the field, and then I found one of the spots where we normally see the deer. And the Wolfgang said, I want you to sit here. He said in a big, thick German, I said, I want you to sit here, and I want you to be still. So I sat up straight, and then all of a sudden, I felt this thing on my shoulder. He rested the rifle on my shoulder. Now, I knew in New York State at this particular time you weren't allowed to hunt with rifles because I think there was like a shotgun situation because I think they were afraid of like people firing rifles, you know, and it goes into somebody's window or something like that, you know?
Yep.
So he had a rifle with a scope and he put the whole goddamn thing on my shoulder and he said, and he just whispers, now don't move. And I was like, okay, God. You got it. He didn't get, and then we just sat there. And he couldn't get the right shot, so he didn't take the shot. And then we just ended up, you know, we didn't do anything. Nothing happened. But that was the only time I've ever done that. And I was just like, that was bizarre. I said, is it going to be loud when you shoot it right off my shoulder? And he goes, just don't say anything. Just put your fingers in here. So I had to put my fingers around where the rifle was so I could have my fingers in the ear. And I wish there was a picture because I was just like, I was asking him all these questions. He's just like controlling his breath. And I said, is it going to be really loud? I said, this just seems like it's really dangerous. And it was really hilarious because I was like, this fucking kid from New York City, I didn't know anything about it. But I'm like, he's a professional hunter. And he would tell me that in Germany, they have very specific classes that you take in order to be a hunter. And you have to learn butchering and you have to learn all this, you know, this gun safety. And he's telling me all about the gun safety. Meanwhile, I rest in a rifle barrel on my shoulder and I got my hands in my ears. You know, whispering, are you going to get him yet? Or you see him over there? Shh, shh, shh. I'll never forget. It was just hilarious. I'm just sitting there just like, I'm kind of uncomfortable sitting with my back straight in the Indian position. I'm feeling very uncomfortable.
He's like, yeah, no kidding. So, Jeff, the human gun rest.
Yeah, it was the human gun rest. I'll never forget that. And when he died, my dad, I have his buck knife. I have Wolfgang's buck knife. My dad, when he died, he left all this stuff for my dad, and then I got Wolfgang's buck knife. I got it in the shop here. Yeah, Wolfgang was a piece of work. So
he must have been pulling something on you.
No, I don't think so. I think he might have been. I mean, he was an older German guy, and I don't believe he was playing a game. It was weird. And I mean,
shoulder rest is notoriously unstable. So
yeah, I would imagine. I mean, certainly if I'm sitting up straight and I'm starting to get uncomfortable, yeah,
no kidding.
Move. Yeah, it makes no sense. It happened. Yeah, no. We got to see the deer up on his back legs eating, you know, leaves off a tree. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, if this isn't a good enough shot for you, I don't know what else to do. Hey, Wolfgang, right. I think you can get him now. What are you fucking waiting for? I'm very uncomfortable. I got my fingers in my ear. My back hurts. This sucks. And you're waiting for... What are you waiting for this goddamn deer to do already?
I'm just trying to find the deer in your scope.
And I can just imagine. I can just imagine. I know me back then, too. And I know there's silence. And then all of you sitting here. I'm just like... just getting fed up here, Wolfgang. Are you going to pull the trigger or what? Okay. All right. Where are we? All right. So let's do some weird news.
Hit me.
I have a little bit of weird news. If this is one of the you asked for it, so you're gonna get it. Now, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna read off a couple stories, and then you decide if you want to do them. Okay. Man told 911 a bear chased him off a cliff. Weeks later, he was arrested for murder.
Speaking of a hunting story, this sounds down those lines. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, so this is a story that happened in Tennessee. In mid-October, a man called the police in eastern Tennessee claiming a bear had chased him off a cliff. But authorities arriving on the scene to find the body of a different man, sparking a multi-state manhunt for the caller that ended with his arrest on murder charges this weekend. Authorities say Nicholas Wayne Hamlet, 45, befriended and lured the victim into the wooded area to take both his life and identity. Hamlet, who was using an alias at the time, had a lengthy criminal history and was already wanted in Alabama for parole violation. After the October incident, another warrant was issued for Hamlet on first-degree murder charges in Monroe, Tennessee. So state and federal authorities warned that Hamlet, who had considered dangerous and potentially armed, was known to travel under aliases. They urged Hamlet to turn himself in and asked the public for help. After weeks of searching and one Halloween night spotting, Hamlet was taken to custody. Right, so what happened?
Yeah.
Monroe County Sheriff's Office said the distressed hiker called 911 shortly before midnight, claiming to be a Mr. Brandon Andrade. He advised the dispatcher they had fallen off a cliff while running from a bear. It said, adding that the call came from near a bridge by this particular skyway, a 43-mile scenic byway in whatchamacallit, it doesn't matter. The distressed caller claimed that he was injured and partially in the water. According to dispatch obtained by the Knoxville Sentinel, the male suspect had hit his head and was unable to move, and his phone had 2% battery, unable to get him back to on 911. Search and rescue teams rushed the area and found the man's body with the identification of Mr. Brandon Christopher Andrade on his person. He was transported to the forensic center while investigators combed the scene. After further investigation, detectives determined that the deceased man was not Brandon Andrade. In fact, it was identified. The identification had been stolen and used on multiple occasions in this case and quickly discovered by Hamlet. Mr. Hamlet used the false name when speaking to law enforcement. The sheriff explained, but before his real identity had been verified, Hamlet had believed to have fled his Tennessee residence. So, guy decides he's going to fake his own death, lures this guy into the woods, fucking throws him off a cliff, then he takes his phone, calls the police and says, I've been attacked by a bear. I'm down by this area. Hurry, whatever. And then he switches his ID, takes his ID, and he tries to change his own personality, his own situation.
I was on board with this and thinking this was a smart guy all the way up until I realized he was faking his own death and not covering up a murder. Because he kind of had it when he was covering up a murder. But that wasn't the case, and he's faking his own death, and yeah, he's an idiot.
The faking your own death thing is wild. There's another one, a guy faked his death to get away from his wife. That was a big one. And there was a long time, I worked with this chef from the Food Network. His name is Carl Ruiz. And he was awesome, and we made a lot of money with him. And he was just a great guy, and he died. And there was a few people who he owed a lot of money to. And there were weird connections, and there was all this strange stuff. And then at one point, I turned to my business partner, Tony, and I said, do you think he's faked his own death? And it wasn't absurd. It wasn't an absurd situation. Maybe he didn't like the life he was leading. Maybe he wanted to start abroad, start new. Maybe, who knows? The fake your own death thing is bizarre.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that people can still pull it off. Well, it never works for the ones we hear about. But who were the ones that are successful, the ones we never hear about?
Oh, you got a good point there. How many of those are out there is right. I think the fake your own death thing, if you number one, you have to be a psychopath. I don't think a sane person would be able to figure out how to do it, but I think you must be some sort of psychopath to put yourself in a position where you are willing to let your friends and loved ones know that you're dead. I mean, this guy was obviously a criminal and he had nothing better to do.
Right. But to do it right, you have to not tell literally a soul. So you're right. I mean, you're basically alienating yourself from your family and they think you're dead forever.
What would be the best way to do it? You got to be in something where there's no real, body is not found.
Well,
you got to do like a plane crash or something, or in the woods, in the water or something.
Well, the best way would be for them to be able to confirm death by DNA. That's the only way to make it perfectly solid. I mean, if you're going to afterwards try to get a
But they can't do that. I mean,
that, card,
that, then you'll never. Then you. I mean, unless you chop your arm off, there's no. Well, there's no way to.
That's the thing. There's the DNA sacrifice. How far do you go?
You know, how far do you go? How far do you go?
It could be as simple as a tooth, or you know, a little bit of your ear, a finger. Yeah, but a tooth. I mean, that's gonna hurt.
Can you imagine? We found this skull, but only one tooth is Coy Baker.
Right.
The rest of it, who the hell knows? But, I mean, this one tooth is Coy Baker. He's dead. Coy Baker's dead. But the rest of them, who knows?
I don't know. I haven't studied it well enough, of course, because I'm not a psychopath. But I bet you people have done it. And you'd also have to be fairly tech savvy because you got to be able to get a completely new identity and it be hooked up to a name if you're going to actually live a regular life again. If you're just going to go on the lam, it doesn't matter. But – you know, if you're going to fake your death and then try to live a normal life, you have to reset a life. You know?
See, I like to think about somebody who, like, I used to think about back in the day when Monica Lewinsky did her thing. I thought maybe she just needs to sell a book, make a couple million dollars, and then just escape. Like, I would think that that's the move. Like, someone like that, someone who just does not want to be the public eye anymore, you get your money and then you disappear.
Right.
Like, I felt like Monica Lewinsky, I was perfect. I was just like, she better fucking disappear. She's never going to get past all this. She's never going to get past any of this. This is going to be for the rest of her life. You got to make your money and disappear. And I always thought, what would you do?
Well, you if you've disappear. Got friends that high up in the government, you could probably find somebody who can help you do this too.
I think that if you sold your book and you made some millions, I think that you could find a small island and just kind of like remake your life. Like, there are actresses. Oh man, have you seen what Bridget Fonda looks like these days? You know what Bridget Fonda is?
Doesn't ring
Bridget
a bell.
Fonda is unbelievable. She was in Jackie Brown. She was in a pile of movies. She was just, I mean, in the 90s, I mean, she was just it. And she just wanted to get out of the. You should Google right now Bridget Fonda now, because she just wanted out of Hollywood, out. So what she did was she aged and she has completely transformed herself. So no one can possibly recognize who she is. I think she's like a librarian or something.
I'm looking her up right now.
It's unbelievable. What Bridget Fonda has done from Jackie Brown to now is she's completely changed who she looks like to the point where no one would ever consider, are you Bridget Fonda? That's what I would do. I would do the 400 pounds.
Right.
That's what you got to do. I think that's what you got to do. I think that that's the way to fake your death. I think you have to completely figure out a way to be unrecognizable.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy,
did you see the Bridget Fonda yet?
Yeah. Yeah. That's
unbelievable, right?
That's
Is that unbelievable?
Mm-hmm.
That's faking your own death right there. That's
that
faking
is.
Your own death. Unrecognizable, and not like these stars who do the goddamn plastic surgery and all this stuff. She made herself unrecognizable. She looks like my neighbor. She does not look like Bridget Fonda anymore.
Right.
I love it. All right. This is a great one. This is a good one. I can't believe this story is hilarious. Mississippi teacher fired after allegedly feeding students dog treats mistaken for beef jerky. I love this story. The now former Calhoun City High School employee, whose name was not released, allegedly mistook treats for beef jerky. At least 8 children consumed at least one bite of the treats on Wednesday, according to Dr. Lisa Langford, the district superintendent. This is a very funny picture of this dog licking his lips, and then there's some beef jerky next to it. Langford also lauded the school nurse for her swift response to the situation, which included a poison control call, according to WTVA. The district also alerted the affected children's parents to the situation. The incident reportedly transpired during what was intended to be a birthday celebration for a few of the students, the local outlet continued. WTVA noted that at least one children was taken to the doctor with a stomach ache. My tummy hurts. My tummy hurts from these fucking dog treats.
I mean, the amount of dog treats I consumed as a child is probably way more than that. So, I mean, it can't be that bad for you, right? Poison control? That seems a little bit of an overreaction.
I once I had heard that some dog treats were good, and I went to PetSmart to get dog food for the dogs and everything like that. And there was somebody there, and they were stocking the shelves. And I said, I have a crazy question to ask you. I said, what is the best tasting dog treat for people? And without stopping, she said, I know exactly what it is. And she showed me, because there's like a whole thing of dog jerky. And she says, and I'll tell you how I know this, because my brother always asks me to bring a bag home.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I was just like, what? Are you kidding me? He's like, yeah, he loves it. And it's cheaper than other beef jerkies. And it's perfectly fine. So I brought this story up specifically because this woman was, matter of fact, I'm glad you asked me, because there is like a pecking order of the best tasting dog treats for people.
That is... Actually, you know what? I'm not as surprised.
No,
I'm not surprised.
Why would you be surprised? It's people less processing, you know?
Stuff. That is true. I mean, yeah, the American Food Association cares more about dogs than people, apparently, because that dog food's pretty clean.
Some of it, I mean, I don't think it was dog food. I think it was like, you know, in the dog treat area, they have like dog jerky. Not jerky mad at dogs, but jerky for dogs. I mean, guys, you know, I mean, you know.
I remember looking up the ingredients list of the dog food for our German Shepherd. Gosh, it was a long time ago. And there really wasn't much in there that wasn't something I would cook and prep to eat as a meal. I mean, in a different form, obviously, but it's not like a bunch of weird stuff in there that we humans can't eat. So.
Yeah. Well,
that may have
I'm
just
sure.
Been the brand
well,
I was
what do you?
At.
I mean, it wasn't like probably kibble, which probably tastes. The one thing that I think is, I mean, I have to feed the cat, and we feed the. Since I was a child, cat food, canned food, I always want to throw up. It smells so bad.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yeah,
but we have these pill pockets for one of the dogs just to have this goddamn medicine, and when I smell, I'm gonna throw up from that too. But I remember back in the day when my wife and I used to work. She would work late nights at the hospital, and then I would work late nights at this restaurant. And then on the way home back to Brooklyn, we would call in and order for Domino's, and then we'd pick up a Domino's pizza, and then the Domino's, because it was open all night, and then the Domino's sausage looked like, you know, it was like looked like kibble. I mean, it looked like kibble. And mm-hmm. I remember my wife had accidentally dropped. You know, she thought there was a piece of, you know, the sausage on the countertop when we were opening the pizza. She ate it, turned out to be a cat, you know, cat kibble. And she was like,
ooh.
It was really grossed out by it. What do you think the majority of the parents in Mississippi would say when they got the call that your child accidentally ate some? Well, your child was given dog jerky to eat. What do you think the action would be?
Mississippi,
Mississippi. That's a different than New York.
That is.
You get a different reaction.
Yeah, if you went to New York or California, that's a different story.
Oh my God, lawyers would be called immediately.
Oh
How
yeah.
Dare you?
Oh, there'd be many lawsuits. But in Mississippi, they're probably like, "Well, did you save me any?" You know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, so what do you think you ate for breakfast this morning? If they were calling me. If they were calling me to tell me that they accidentally fed my daughter dog jerky, and I would say, why are you calling me? Why are you so? Is she okay? Okay, why are you calling me? Wasting my time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, she ate a little beef jerky. There was a dog jerky. Okay, big deal.
Yeah, who cares? I mean, it's not God. That bad. But there are parents out there who would flip their freaking lid.
Dude. We live in a very soft place. We live in a very soft place. I'm grateful to be. My wife and I are both Generation X, proud to be Generation X, and she refers to us as the neglected and abused generation, which is true. My wife and I weren't abused, but we were neglected. It was the neglected generation. We would eat beef. I mean, you kidding me? If somebody told me that there was some dog beef jerky. When I was in private school, in boys school, and the teacher even said, hey, you want to try this dog beef jerky? I'd be like, yeah, give it up. We're hungry. Hungry over here. Are you kidding me?
Hands down. But not this day and age. Those parents, no.
I love it. I love You know, it's harder and harder to find good weird news, and that one was and not weird news that it's like has real, you know, people. It's, I don't want controversial weird news. I want like, you know, children eat dog beef jerky. What, the parents are upset. That's what if somebody got fired. Can you imagine when you have to explain why you got fired?
Like to your next employer.
That's the stuff I love. Oh my God. I don't think I would imagine that they didn't get sued. I'm imagining that the tummy ache thing. I mean, you fucking kids get tummy aches. They get for anything. I mean, I remember going to the nurse as a little boy, and I said, "My stomach hurts." And they said, "What did you eat for breakfast?" "I didn't eat anything for breakfast." "Well, that's why your stomach hurts. You're hungry." Like, I know all about it. I don't think that it was that big of a deal, but.
And once they got the kids to the hospital, what are they going to do? They're just going to tell them, "Hey, well, you'll shit it out in about 4 hours. You'll be fine."
That's what Dr. Baker says. "Don't worry, young man. You'll shit it out in no time."
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Oh, God, and the dog breath. Oh, my God. Oh, fantastic. Guys, we've said it all. Coy Baker, tell us about what's going on with Baker Forge with the Black Friday sale and... tell us what we're doing.
All right. So Black Friday. So this episode comes out on Black Friday.
Right.
We'll have been running some sales already for you guys listening, starting on Friday today and going through Sunday. We're having all kinds of sales on Elite Aurora Mai in the ladder pattern, the Go Mai Kushim in the diamond, the Copper Mai Surge, all of those between 30 and 50% off. We're running some massive deals. We also got something really cool going on with the Gator Piss. It's a Gator Piss Starter Damascus combo.
Whoa.
So, yeah. So, for a 30% savings, you can get a gallon of Gator Piss and a bar of 100-layer Damascus, what we call our Starter Damascus. So, it's just a quarter-inch thick, about 10 inches long, 2 inches wide. You can forge it. You can, you know, forge a knife out of it, or you can cut it up and restack it and pattern it. You can do all sorts of stuff to it. We sell quite a bit of this stuff, but we're comboing it with the Gator Piss for just Black Friday. I don't actually have the price sitting in front of me. It's like $125 for both.
Wow.
A bar of Damascus and a gallon of Gator Piss. Yeah,
that's
so we're
huge.
Excited about that. We're going to run that all the way through Cyber Monday, in fact. So those of you listening, if you've never used Gator Piss, or even if you've forged knives but really haven't done much with Damascus, the Damascus as well is a great starter point. You can angle grind some pattern into it, forge it out into a knife, and then etch it in the best etching in the world. So,
and I want to tell you all, guys, about Gator Piss. It is banging stuff. I use it for everything. Anything I'm etching with, I've used it, and it works really well. For stainless Damascus, for doing the pattern, for hitting it after the etch, getting the pattern, blowing the pattern out, stuff is dynamite. And I would highly suggest. It's easy to use, easy to work with, no mixing. Definitely go ahead to BakerForge.com, check out what they got, especially for this Black Friday sale. But in general, the stuff is like, I love everything you send me, and it's always a crowd pleaser. So I really appreciate what you guys are doing
at
BakerForge.
Good deal. Well, thank you so much. Do you need a refresh on Gator Piss? I don't know how long it's been since you got some, but I might need to be able to get you a new.
I'm good. You sent me one not too long ago, and I'm having great results with it, and I really appreciate that. And you've been always very good to me, and I want to make sure that whatever it takes, I want to be good to you. So I really appreciate you being here and having a good time, and I wish you the best of luck. In my opinion, when it comes to these small micro manufacturing businesses in the United States. I'm very appreciative of what you're doing for the American manufacturing field, and you're giving some great products to people who can really use it, and it's just terrific. And I appreciate it. I love watching everything you do.
Thank you so much, and really appreciate your support, the support of the podcast. It's been amazing. I see discount codes coming from this show all the time. So
really, good.
Oh yeah. Really enjoy the listenership here and everything they're doing for us as far as support. So thanks to everyone out there.
Guys, you're making me look good. I love it. All right, guys, I want to wish you all a happy beginning to the mania season, And we're going to keep going through Christmas, and I got shows planned I'm excited about. I need you to send in your questions for the great question with Pat Quinn. We're going to be doing forging questions. So if you're listening to this now and you're thinking, I want to help Jeff somehow, send in your questions to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram. We got forging questions coming up with Pat soon. And listen, guys, thanks very much. Coy, you're the man. I really appreciate the hell out of you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. All right, guys, we'll see you next week.
Ding dong merrily on high, Papa John's does Christmas pizza. Only £12 for a large, yes, Christmas on a pizza.
Start a new tradition with our All the Trimmings pizza featuring pulled turkey, sage onions, sprouts, and roast potato tots. Papa John's, better ingredients, better pizza. Get a large pizza from the menu for only £12. You know ho ho, it makes sense. Offer ends 1st of January 2025. Original large pizzas only, excludes additional toppings. Minimum spend for delivery, terms apply.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.